Hello and welcome to the Adam Ruins Everything podcast. I'm your host, Adam Conover. You may also know me as the host of Adam Ruins Everything on True TV. And guess what? That show is back with an all-new season starting July 11th at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on True TV. We're back for 16 more episodes where we're going to be breaking your misconceptions, telling you fascinating things you never thought could be true. But guess what? They are, and we're bringing them to you with comedy on True TV. But this is the Adam Ruins Everything podcast, where I talk to researchers, academics, and experts about the work they do and why it is so cool and gosh darn important. Today's guest is Pete Hammond. You may have seen him on Adam Ruins Hollywood, and he's here today to tell us more about how networks and studios spend massive amounts of money and throw huge campaigns to help them win those entertainment awards that we watch every spring. Pete is the awards columnist for Deadline Hollywood, where he covers the Oscar and Emmy seasons. He's widely considered one of the preeminent award season commentators for film and television, and before joining Deadline, he was a regular awards columnist for the Los Angeles Times. I'm so excited to have Pete join us in the studio today, in the flesh. Let's get right to the interview. Well, Pete, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Fun.
Your appearance on the show actually was one of my favorites that we shrunk you down and made you an Oscar statue.
A lot of people saw it too, Adam. I'm telling you, it was amazing. The number of people that, hey, I saw you. You did. No kidding. and I even did a thing the week before the Oscars. I do this thing at a school, you know, where we talk about Oscar season and everything. And they started the panel that I was on by showing that segment from Adam Ruins Everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he thought it was very informative and would be nice to embarrass me in front of this crowd.
I hope we made you look good.
Think you did. I thought it looked great. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool visual. It was like our effects team was pretty proud of themselves.
Every time I talk about special effects now, I say I have a better understanding of it for sure. Yeah.
Well, so you're the awards columnist for Deadline. Tell us a little bit about what is that day-to-day like? Like, what is your involvement in the whole awards process?
Yeah, well, it's mostly the Oscar season, but it's also Emmy season now, too. And so it's year-round. And I cover whatever's going on in terms of the races, you know, the contest, as it were, and all the news. Everybody's really interested in awards now for some reason. Everybody's got their own awards pundit, as they say. You know, right. I just came from taping some stuff for a Gold Derby, which is owned by the same people that own Deadline. Mm-hmm. And that whole site is devoted to, like, horse race odds and things on who's going to win. And they're asking me, like, well, who's your seventh choice for best supporting actress in a drama series? And I'm going, like, well, I haven't thought about that much one, you know, but it's just this intense thing. And it goes on for months.
Well, it's part of the sportsification of entertainment a little bit. I realized that's one of the things people like about SNL that it took me a little while to figure out. Like what, you know, what's so captivating about that show? Partially it's because it's like, oh, how are all the new cast members doing? Like, how'd this sketch go over? You know what I mean? Like, it's that sort of like element of talking about people's careers in the same way you talk about how the new left fielder for the Mets is doing or whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy. People are really into it. And the funny thing I see is you got to be careful what you say, because it goes a long way. And a lot of people that are potentially nominees for awards check these sites and they read everything and they say, hey, I thought you liked me. You know, why didn't you predict me? And I go like, yeah. You know, come on, folks. It's a game. It's a game from my point of view. But
that's really interesting, because I think most people, you know, I mean, the awards, when they're on television, they're very, you know, they're sort of very serious and very grand. Yes. And, you know, the entertainment industry is interesting because it is an industry, but it is also producing art. And the sort of illusion that we have, or the idea that most people have, is that these awards are being given to the best art, that you've got these voters and they watch all the movies and they say, oh my, wasn't, you know, what Tom Hanks really did give the best performance this year. What a majestic portrayal, you know, or whatever. Oh, I wept in the theater, et cetera. And so he's got my vote. Yeah. That's the sort of ostensible, that's the pledge that they make. And that is the way that a lot of us understand it. But you say to you, it's a game. In what way?
Oh, it's just a game. You see everybody playing it in a big way. But for me, the game is is of predictions. You know, I don't know. It's sort of like fun to throw out different names and see if you can influence somebody, you know, simply by putting them on your list.
Really?
Like, I just did that on this Gold Derby thing today for actor and actress in a comedy series because I love this new show on Amazon called I Love Dick.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's just brand new. So it needs all the help you can get.
Sure.
And I think Catherine Hahn is just brilliant in it and Kevin Bacon. So I threw them on my thing and the guy's going like, are you nuts? This is like going out on a limb. And I said, you know what? This is like I'm bringing it to somebody's attention. And if I can do it this way by predicting they'll get nominated, I'm going to do it. And so that part of it's a game to me. It's not a science predicting this
yeah.
stuff, but it is a business. And certainly the other part of it is what I do is reporting on the award season and everything that goes on and all of that. And that's become very big business. And it's
right.
all driven by egos, I think. A lot
huh.
of it. Yeah. Because people, you know, whether it's in their contract or not, they expect a campaign if they see somebody else is doing it.
Mm.
I was just talking to somebody today that said they interviewed Jessica Lange, who's in Feud, the miniseries Feud, with Susan Sarandon. And they did an interview with her, and it aired. And then somebody heard about it from Sarandon's camp immediately and said, well, why aren't you doing us? Well, why aren't we in there? You know, and it's this whole competitive thing, and people really pay attention. And so you have to be, you know, fair all the way around. And I tend to not even get into the prediction game until very late because
mm-hmm.
because of that, because you're going to run into these people all the time when you're writing
right.
about it. And you're trying to maintain an objectivity or come off that way. And it's very difficult if you've come out and predicted that they're not even going to get nominated.
Well, it's interesting. There's levels of the game, right? Because there's the ostensible reality where we're just, you know, voting on whoever moved us the most in the theater or while watching television. Then there's the game of like, okay, now we've all got our pools and we're saying who are you putting for this or that. And then there's the level of the game where it's about money and it's about the studio making money and it's about the competition for Oscars and it's about the business interests of
yeah.
the experts and the not the experts, the executives and the studios or the networks, etc. And you know, it's funny because I when I relate to my own work in the entertainment industry, you know, I noticed when I was working at College Humor, which, you know, we'd make web videos and,
yeah.
and you know, there were we were very and still are highly regarded in that space or whatever,
sure.
you know, things get a lot of views. And every year we would submit for these awards, like the Webby Awards
right.
and the Telly Awards, which
yeah,
are
yeah.
these two different categories of award.
Right.
And every year we would win a couple. They would submit us for like 15 and we'd win for like three or four of both of them and a couple more, you know, statues would go up on the mantelpiece, you know. And I realized, oh, this is really serving a business interest, you know, because these are, you know, makes everybody feel good, great for morale, important for that reason. And then also, if you're trying to sell an ad to Colgate, hey, can we make a funny video for you for an ad sales project? So, well, hey, we won five Webby Awards
That's
last year.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And it helps. And the awards are making money off of these, too, because it costs $500,000 to submit for each one.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, and I realized, oh, we just have like an awards budget, like College Humor or whatever company like this is saying,
yeah.
okay, we'll devote X number of thousands of dollars for our award campaign every year, so we bring in the number of awards that we need to keep the business going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started to see it more transactionally that way. And then when I moved to LA and I saw the amount of campaigning that goes on, every award season, suddenly every billboard is for the show, but it's not so that you watch the show,
right.
because the show's already come out.
Yeah.
It's not saying, hey, watch these new episodes of Scandal or BoJack Horseman or whatever. It's saying, hey, the awards are trying to get you, the ads are trying
yeah.
to get you to vote for them.
For your consideration.
And I realized it was kind of a bigger version of the same process where it's these companies, they have a real business incentive to win a certain number of awards. And I find that very interesting because it's so different than what the folks at home think when you're watching, you know, when you're watching the show.
Well, it's fascinating. And, you know, particularly with the influx of new players like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu,
mm-hmm.
they've really ratcheted up because they've got endless amounts of money. And they look at this awards thing as part of their business to be taken seriously by by creative people, so they will come there. If they can prove they can win Emmys and really support you with all of this stuff, and they are doing it big time right now, then that's good for their business and the bottom line. And it's also, conversely, with what the Emmy campaign that's going on now, it's good for the Television Academy. They're the only one of, like, the Oscars, the Grammys, or whatever, that charge you to enter the race. And so they have 9,000 submissions, and each one of them costs money.
Yeah.
So
wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good for them, and they rent out their big theater in North Hollywood. Every night there's an FYC event for something else, and they send out the invites.
Really?
It goes out through the Academy, through their mailing house, even though they say they are not affiliated with this event or anything other than taking the money.
So they host it. They say it's not our event, but
it's not our event, but we'll take your money.
You're using our space.
That is what happens, really. I mean, it's a big business for them as well, and they make a ton out of that to pay for that theater, which is a brand new theater that costs $40 million.
And the thing is, you know, a lot of the topics we do on our show are about things that are very nefarious, or it's about a scam of some kind, and I don't really put this in that category. It's like, you know, the Television Academy's making money off of this. Well, yeah, sure, it's Hollywood, you know, like, of course they're making money. It's just, to me, what's funny is how much it differs from the illusion of what, you know, someone not in the industry might think of how the process works.
Yeah.
You talked about Netflix. Let me ask you about that in more detail, because what gave me the initial idea for this story was hearing a radio story. I forget where. I think it was on one of the LA NPR affiliates, but about how Netflix really, when they went after their first Emmy, it was a really, really deliberate decision, and it was about how much money they put into it. Because I remember when House of Cards came out, and people were joking, like, "Oh, is House of Cards going to win a Webby this year?" You know, because it's seen as a website. Netflix was a website.
That's right.
And now they're you know, people say Netflix, that's TV. They call it television. And so the theory was that they had gone into those awards super, super aggressively so that they would be mentally put in that television box by the industry and by, you know, the audience at home. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when they went in, I was used to be on the board of governors of the Television Academy when it came up to allow digital and streaming and all of this stuff. At the time, we didn't know what these were. Netflix wasn't around or anything. But we made a decision to allow them into the race and into the game then, so that interactive stuff, digital stuff, was suddenly had its own categories, and streaming, as it became, was instantly eligible by the rules that we made then. And so the TV Academy could have said, no, this is not good and all this, but no. And actually, we had a retreat once, the governors, where they invited Ted Sarandos to be our speaker.
And remind us, who is Ted Sarandos?
Ted Sarandos is the chief content officer of Netflix. So he's responsible for all the programming and the movie buys and all of that. He's the guy that brings the content to Netflix.
Got it. And he was at your retreat.
Yes, he was at our retreat a few years ago when I was on the Board of Governors, and he made a speech to us, and this was when Netflix was in its early days, and we play games at the thing at night and all that stuff, and he's playing games with us, and I'm saying, is this like asking the wolf come into the hen house here?
are you doing like trust falls with Ted Sarandos?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he knows how to weasel his way into this game. You know, he's running for the Board of Governors of the Motion Picture Academy right now. And
really?
That's really letting the wolf into the hen house because they're having a hard time breaking through into the Oscar race. And most recently, I was at the Cannes Film Festival, and they had two entries, and they put them in the can, and it caused huge controversy through the whole thing because they're not doing theatrical. They're not in theaters in France, and it's a big deal there. And so they've outlawed it for next year, but they were competing this year, these two. And now they have a rule that you must be in theaters. But Netflix was going there, knocking on the door and saying, we're going to change the rules of the industry and the way these things are going. And when they came up with House of Cards, that was their first big Emmy play. And that was a very important thing. So they sent food trucks all around town, wherever you could find Academy members, and served them giant steaks. I had 6 steaks delivered to my house. I'm not kidding. 6 big steaks from this place that Frank Underwood ate at in Washington, D.C.
Raw or cooked?
They were raw, but they were later cooked. But It's incredible.
So they
you
just
know.
Sent you meat. They're like, here's some to campaign to you. As
well, it was saying Frank Underwood goes to this steak place and whatever. Yes. And so they imported these steaks, you know. So
wow.
there was a tie-in.
Yes.
But it was kind of crazy, but they got attention and they got nominations. And now they're challenging HBO, you know, they'll soon be the leader in nominations here.
They've so quickly vaulted, and largely because of you know those awards, or at least in my view, because of all the awards that they've won, it's like Netflix and HBO are now sort of in the you know they're on that tier one, and you know they're sort of tied for first with everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of prestige, you know, when something is on Netflix, people really pay attention now.
Yeah. Well, you know what they've done this year? I mean, they've ratcheted both they and Amazon. Amazon took over the Hollywood Athletic Club on Sunset Boulevard and turned it into a virtual museum of their shows.
Really?
So they flew in all the sets, the costumes, everything. They would have nightly Q&As there in this space and have parties and big, you know, and the wine was flowing and everything. And they drew a lot of Academy members there. Not to be outdone, Netflix found a 29,000 square foot building, empty building, across the street from the Motion Picture Academy, oddly enough, in Beverly Hills. And it's still going right now. Every night they have FYCs. They had a big party there. And they have exhibits of all of their shows. They had a party, you know, where they show, you know, they have a big wall that's nothing but oranges. And that's supposed to be Orange is the New Black. They have another big giant exhibit, which is giant playing cards, which is House of Cards. The best one was Stranger Things. You walk in there and they have the bicycle in the neighborhood, but then it says there's a door there, and they said, be sure you go knock on the door. And you go knock on the door, and somebody comes, you know, out like, you know, a ghost or something.
It's a haunted house.
Yeah, it's like a haunted thing. It was freaky. But they had, and then they had celebrities and people turn up. Everybody kept saying, did you see Norman Lear over there? I said, is he on display too? My God, you know. But he was just sitting there, and he might as well have been, you know.
and that's really following in, I mean, when you say Amazon did it, that's really following in Netflix's footsteps. Because I remember when Amazon was first getting into TV, they were like, oh, we're going to crowdsource TV or something. they were like, I remember they were like soliciting scripts and from like just anybody could send in a script and they would give you they had this weird sort of like tech approach to making TV. And then Netflix really went in and said, okay, we're going to be HBO. And then a couple years later, that's what they all started doing, and everyone sort of realized that these awards were the path to legitimacy.
Exactly. That's what Hulu now is in that position now, and they feel they're going to have – they've got some pretty good shows, you know, Casual and The Path, but they haven't been able to translate that to big Emmy nominations, at least in the first year. This year they have The Handmaid's Tale, and they really think that's their ticket to Emmy success.
Well, and that is that buzzy of a show you hear so much about it. And I noticed that, you know, CISO, which is, you know, comedy streaming platform that's still sort of finding its footing or, you know, kind of a scrappy underdog, you know, I have a lot of friends with great shows on CISO. But, you know, it's still sort of getting started. You know, this year was my first full year as a member of the Writers Union, so I can vote in the Writers Award. So I get sent screeners and you know, I now get those free DVDs and things like that. And I noticed that CISO, the stuff they were sending was so elaborate. They sent for Take My Wife, which is Rhea Butcher, who is plays Rhea on our show. Her and her wife Cameron Esposito do a show called Take My Wife that got a lot of good buzz for them this year. And so instead of just sending a DVD, they sent me like this 3D box that like you took the top off, you know, sort of like you know, about like a foot by a foot size. You take the top off and then the sides fall down, and there was a little stand up figurine of the two of them holding each other. It came in this big box. It was like this very elaborate, beautifully printed thing. Like I kept it in my office because it was like a very attractively printed object. And you know, I know what kind of budgets, you know, CISO is running. You know, I have a general sense of it. I'm like, I think they might have spent more on these awards mailers than they did, you know, on the shows themselves.
You should see what I got on Genius, that new show on Nat Geo with Jeffrey Rush as Albert Einstein. It was this elaborate set. I couldn't figure it out. I'm so not good technically, and it said DVDs enclosed, but I couldn't find any DVDs. Giant box. You just pull out this stuff. I don't even know what it was. It was all these kind of mathematical formulas in the form of bookends. And then there was this little thing that you're supposed to plug into your thing, and that's the show, I guess. Believe me, half the Academy members that would never figure that out. But they sent this out to the press or to get you into the thing and to promote the show. And they also sent out something that says, Pete Hammond is a genius. And I have that nameplate now. And, I mean, they did this for everybody. It's like
that, like personalized to
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Now, that kind of thing you could never do, like, in an awards campaign for the Motion Picture Academy. They have rules that have outlawed all of that. You just have the plain brown wrapper, just the name, no critics' reviews, nothing on – and they don't even participate officially in screeners, but they have rules for people that make screeners. And they said you can't try to influence us in any way because they used to have big gifts and things that go. But the Television Academy still allows – that kind of stuff. Anything goes. And it's if you look at the latest issue of Emmy Magazine, the official magazine of the Television Academy, you can barely lift it number one. Hmm. And they stick in all these DVDs and things and glossy inserts. It's crazy. You know, it's crazy. But they're targeting and absolutely trying to hit that one audience any way they can and to try to stand out from each other.
It's such an incredibly – I mean, it's fun to talk about it because it's such an overheated advertising environment where you know, it's almost like going to Times Square where it's like everything's got to have a bigger neon sign than everything else. But at what point does it become, you know, sort of a – or has it already become in your mind? Are there any examples of it becoming like a giveaway where it's where it's almost like, hey – you know, whoever gives the, you know, the biggest, whoever throws the best party or whoever, you know, gives the most free stuff or the most valuable looking thing or, you know, whoever gives away the most free drinks, the most free meals or whatever is going to be the one that wins. You know, I mean, we talked about on our show that sometimes they would give people iPads with the movie on it. I forget which award that was for, but, you know, like that sort of level of thing.
Oh, yeah.
When does it cross that line?
Well, it crosses the line when it becomes garish and obvious and you know, I don't think it's crossed the line now because these people line up to go to all these events and get their free food and their free drinks every single night of the season. They're miserable the rest of the year when they can't go to these things every night. I you know, now it's sort of the same crowd that you see at the thing. Every time I go and do a Q&A or something, it's pretty much the same people whose life revolves around this few months of the year, you know, with Emmy voting and everything else. But I don't know that it's crossed the line. I think, you know, if they've got the money and they allow it, you have to hope that the voters out there are more sensible than being able to just be bought by, some tchotchke that someone's sending you. Quite frankly, it's piled up. I've been a member of the TV Academy forever, but I mean, this stuff just piles up. It's like unbelievable. It's out of control, and you know, you have to. It's a whole job just to go through it all and get rid of it, or even watch it. Watching it's a challenge too. If you can get through the big giant boxes that the TV studios are fond of sending, you know, to even find the DVDs in them, in some cases. But I would think a campaign for Adam Ruins Everything would have been perfect. You could have done this whole thing. You know, where you're ruining the whole award season for people and doing fun things. Yeah.
Well, this year we, True TV has never gone in for the awards before, as far as I know, or not made
they
a big play.
They sent a DVD for Billy on the Street last year. I haven't seen anything from them this year. But
I thought that they sent, I forget which award it was for. You know, I know that they're starting to do Emmys for us. I looked at some artwork they said they were going to send around, and we also campaigned for a Peabody nomination this year. Which I was like, oh, maybe we, you know, cross our fingers on that one because that's sort of the smart person's, you know, public service award.
Very prestigious.
But we were not nominated. They nominated Stranger Things.
There you go. Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Netflix made it to the Peabody's too. I don't know if we have a chance now. I mean, do you have, because we are the true underdog, right? You know, True TV is not the network with the biggest awards budget. And we're talking about how, you know, big these, you know, how much advertising, you know, you need to do to stand out. Do you have any advice for our show in order to get a little awards attention?
I think it's good to do like a For Your Consideration event and have a reception because that goes out to all the members. You know, they send out you can even spend a little more and send out the postcard in the mail. Otherwise, they will email it. The invite. It all goes out to the actual Academy membership list. And so it puts your name and it gives you that recognition there. Which
and so
is...
that's like an event where, because I've never been to one of these events. So like, what would I do?
Well, I'll tell you, driving over here today, I happened to notice one, which is, I guess, smart on their part, but they have the banners up and down the street, down mm-hmm. the boulevard, you know, where that usually is for the Amundsen Theater or some play or something going on here.
Yeah.
This was for tonight's, June 1st, FYC event for my crazy ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at it, and I didn't have to just concentrate on one because it's a hole all the way down the street.
I've seen those.
With those banners.
Literally, and every street light has a little hanging
yeah,
for your consideration.
So as
banner.
I went from one to one to one, I finally read in the smaller print, it's at CBS Radford, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. today, so I missed it. Now, who is going to go? This is a first for me.
Yeah.
Who's going to an FYC for your consideration event at 8 in the morning in Studio City? I'm sorry, but I'm not. I'm not doing it, but it's nice they're trying it. But I don't even know what the thinking behind that is, because
yeah.
usually these things are at night and that sort of thing.
Yeah, give people some wine and get them.
Yeah, yeah. So this was a morning thing, and it must have been something. But they're trying to stand out, in other words. They're trying to be different. And by doing that, that's one way of doing that. Whether they got a crowd or not, I have no idea. But
well, speaking of crazy ex-girlfriend, you know, Rachel Bloom has been on the show, and we've talked. And
she was on the episode I was on.
She yeah. was on that episode talking about the red carpet and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, she was talking about that side of it rather than awards specifically. But she's, you know, she and I have talked about how she did so many events that first year, especially when they won the Golden Globe. And she talked about it almost like she would like personally sort of meet the various voters, and that it was
well, with the Golden Globes, that's not difficult. There's only 80 of them.
Oh, okay.
And all you have to do is feed them. They like shrimp, and they love – it has to be food, though. I mean, really, you know. And they do have rules because they used to get hit right and left.
Yes.
And they were kicked off NBC years ago for giving Pia Zadora the – most exciting newcomer of the year against Meryl Streep or somebody. But yeah, it was for her sterling performance in The Lonely Lady. You got to see that just for what she does with a garden hose. But
I can't imagine.
But she won the award, and it turned out, oh, that her husband, who happened to own the Riviera Hotel at the time in Las Vegas, flew them all to Las Vegas for a weekend and, you know, basically bought the award.
Wow.
And so that was a no-no because NBC, as any network, has standards and practices, and even when it comes to award shows. But that went away. And they changed their rules.
They clamped down a little bit.
Yeah, they returned the Rolex watches that Sharon Stone sent to them.
Jeez.
And now they have a, I think it's a $90 or $100 limit on what you can give them. And Tom Ford this year sent male and female Tom Ford perfume and cologne.
I mean, that's not nothing. Yeah,
they made them return one of them. They couldn't have both because they have to be a legitimate group, you know.
So you get to take your pick and you send one back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say under $100, it's like, okay, he can't send him an iPad, you gotta send him a Kindle.
Yeah.
Like, it's still something, you know.
And I know so many people in the foreign press, and so many of them are trying to avoid all this stuff, you know, but there's mm-hmm. still members there that are from the old school of, like, you know, what can you give me? And isn't it cool? I'm a member here, and I'm one of 80
wow.
votes. And so you got to wine and dine. And wining and dining them is one thing. Flying them on junkets around the world, and I'm not kidding, to sets and things.
They do that now?
Premieres, they do it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, are these people just, because there's only 80 of them, there's only 365 days in a year, are they just spending
yeah.
every single day going to these events?
Well,
like
they're
meeting
hoping to
Rachel
get a good
Bloom
crowd.
Everybody
I mean,
else?
You know, a crowd for their press conference. Yeah, I have to have a press conference for every movie and TV show. And so to get a good crowd there, you know, if you get 30 of them to show up, that's considered a home run by the publicists in town, you know, 30 to 40. So you're not going to get all of them at any given time, but, you know, two or three votes can make a difference with
yeah,
with
absolutely. I mean, especially because
and
so
it's
few.
Got a huge audience and it's a huge show and it's on NBC and it really is one of the top shows of the year. So the fact that it's the Hollywood Foreign Press, you know, doing this and who are these people? But, you know, basically they're just a media organization at best. But they wield a lot of power because they've got the platform for it. And studios don't hesitate to spend.
Well, we're here talking to Deadline Hollywood columnist Pete Hammond. We'll be back in just a moment, so please stick around.
Are stacks of unread books taking over your apartment?
Do you constantly miss your train stop because you're caught up in reading?
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
We party hard.
And by party hard, we mean read books.
So join us every Thursday on Reading Glasses, a Maximum Fun podcast about reading and book culture.
Get more out of your reading life.
We'll help you conquer your to-be-read pile.
Get out of that book slump.
And squeeze more reading time into your busy day.
Learn how to read better.
Wow, that was good.
Welcome back to Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. I'm here talking to Deadline Hollywood columnist Pete Hammond. So how do you feel about the let me ask you this. For I mean, is how much are they spending at this point? Is it
I heard that the Netflix sent out, I weighed it last year, 22 pounds of DVDs.
I saw photos of that. And it was almost like a power move. It was like they literally sent a DVD for every show that they made. And it was like as big as like a pallet of bricks.
Yes.
Just to be like,
huge.
look at how much we make.
And mind you, this is for a streaming service that also sent a simple little card that gives you 3 months free to watch all this stuff on your streaming service.
Yeah.
So you don't need this stuff. But they sent it out 22 pounds. I asked Ted Sarandos. He said, I thought it was 20. No, I waited. It was 22. And, that's crazy. That's crazy. But
how many people did they send that to? How many people?
The entire Academy membership.
How many is that?
That is, well, it's gone up this year, but it's 24,000 members, but only 21,500 are voting members.
So they sent 20 pounds of DVDs to 21,000 people.
Yes, they did, and it's an incredible thing. And they're estimating the cost of the campaign this year, just the mailing alone, at somewhere between $2.5 to $4 million. That's just mailings.
Wow.
So that's not everything else. That's
just for Netflix or for?
This is for Netflix, but it's most of them. You know, I mean, if they're, because this is a big number of DVDs.
So just Netflix is spending $2 to $4 million just on shipping costs.
Yeah, and production of these things.
Okay.
Some of them are elaborate boxes, and some of them. HBO has a philosophy. We take every show we've done, put them all in one box, and that's it.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 you know, and they're going to be fair to everybody. But others are looking for breakouts anywhere they can, so they throw it all in and hope it works.
Does Netflix have, like an unfair advantage? Because it seems like sometimes it seems like Netflix has more money than anybody else because
Amazon has a lot of money, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if Amazon is selling every single – it's like if Walmart was, the ones trying to buy their way into the award. It's like a little bit of a huge fish in a teeny tiny
pond. It's interesting to see that Netflix could not buy their way into the Oscars, though, with all of this, which they tried with Beast of No Nation, which won a SAG Award and a Golden Globe Award.
I remember that.
SAG Award, but they had big ads and things. But one head of a studio, Paramount actually, told me, if we fall for this, we're stupider than we look, because they feel like that is going to take over the industry, and it's not in the motion pictures industry's interest to have a streamer there that barely plays theaters. And so, but they've tried it and tried it and tried it with different ways, and they're going to try it again this year too. With movies, and try to break through that way. And, you know, if they can, they can. You know, we'll see. But a lot of people are wary of it in the movie business. Amazon, on the other hand, does run their films theatrically and in theaters, and then streams them. That's their thing. And so they go to the exhibition thing. I was there at CinemaCon, and they had a big thing saying, we did not lie to you, or we told the truth, you know, that we're going to play this in theaters, Manchester by the Sea, and they did. And they won two Oscars, and they got nominated for Best Picture, and they're way ahead of the game of Netflix in the Oscar game, because they will play theaters. But Netflix doesn't want to do that, and they don't want to – their thing is streaming, and at best in a theater day and date. Like they have War Machine right now with Brad Pitt. It's playing at one theater in Santa Monica, one run, but it's mainly a streaming thing. Whereas Amazon, it spends a ton of money on their campaign too, for Manchester by the Sea, a fortune. And I went to a party that Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, had at his house over here in Beverly Hills.
Oh, wow.
And I'm telling you, it was A-list. They had a lot of big names you don't normally see out, but Academy members, big names. Diane Keaton was there, and Faye Dunaway, and a lot of people that don't go to every little thing. And,
well, I can imagine if Jeff Bezos is like, you know, you're like, I'm going to see like one of those drones deliver a package or something. Like it's that's like another level. That's like if Steve Jobs or, you know, where it's –
It is. And he's there at the Oscars, sitting at the Oscars, watching his movies win, which are basically a loss leader to, you know, sell free shipping or sell shipping.
You know? That's the crazy thing. I mean, Manchester by the Sea, when I saw it last year, and I was one of the Oscar contenders that I saw. And you didn't have the sense that it was this Amazon. I mean, I knew it was an Amazon movie, but it felt like any other sort of Oscar bait style, serious drama movie. But yeah, that's a really interesting point. That at the end of the day, Manchester by the Sea is a way to get people to sign up for Amazon Prime, which is mostly about free shipping.
That's it. And so they're willing to wait to start streaming it on Amazon after it. And it's a smarter move because it has all this cred now with the Oscars and with the notoriety it got when it was in theaters. And here it is on Amazon. And it's going to do the same thing for them that way that it would have done, had you done it day and date like Netflix insists on doing.
Right.
But Netflix is just stuck in this idea that it's got to be, that we're going to revolutionize the industry and people are going to watch movies this way.
Yeah.
And that's just another way of thinking. But the studios are afraid of it. And in terms of the Oscar value for studios now, they'll basically put out one movie a year, two movies in the fall. You know, that'll be their, I call it their ego movie. So their executives can go get their Oscar tickets and go and play in that game. But it's not their business anymore. It is certainly the business of these streamers to get into that business, but it is not the business of those studios.
Of the
major studios.
The major studios, the sort of Oscar world is just, they're just doing it as a little side. What is their main business?
Like, their major business is making money and tent poles and having franchises.
Superhero movies.
Pleasing China.
That's so that is so fascinating because, when I think about the movie business, I do think about like, okay, you've got the, the Warcraft movie, which is, made a ton of money in China and is like all about these, this major sort of franchise as a commodity, et cetera. And so you feel that that's light years away from the Oscars and what the Oscars
light
is.
Years. I mean, there was a joke Jimmy Kimmel did on the Oscars this year at Matt Damon's expense saying, what a nice guy. He was going to play this role in Manchester by the Sea. He gave it to his childhood friend, Casey Affleck. Turns out to be a Best Actor Oscar nomination, And what does Matt do? He puts on a ponytail and does the Chinese movie, The Great Wall, which lost $850 million. So there you go. So they actually not only, make these movies, but then make fun of them when it comes time for Oscar time,
Right.
The little movie, that he didn't do. And the other one that's an embarrassment, but nevertheless is where the business is.
So then the studio is putting in your view, the Oscar movie in just sort of for the ego
so that and to be part of that. Yeah. And to placate, the adult crowd that they could make money off of if it's a successful movie like La La Land.
Sure.
But nobody knows. These are the risks now for the studios to take a little movie like La La Land, a musical set in L.A., that's inspired by Jacques Demy. It doesn't exactly something you can't go in and easily sell to a studio, yet it made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it won a lot of awards. And that is the perfect storm. When you have that combination.
But that's a bigger risk for them, you think?
Because much bigger risk because
if that movie doesn't hit.
They don't know how to market those movies. And it's, you can make the movie, but if you're going to go out and release it, it costs a lot of money to market movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big investment no matter what you do on these things. But that kind of thing can pay off big time for them. That kind of movie.
Well, the awards campaigns themselves, do they turn a profit for the studio in terms of the return that they get on the movie? If they spend, we're going to spend, $1 million on just the Oscar campaign for this movie. Are they going to make back a million and a quarter?
Well, if it's a Best Picture winner, and if it hasn't opened and if it's going to, if it's basically playing out at Oscar time, a Best Picture win could be up to $50 million or not. A little movie like Moonlight isn't going to do that, when it wins Best Picture. But a picture that comes out in November or December and has most of its play still in front of it domestically and particularly internationally, because Oscar is a big symbol internationally, that's a big plus. And then in the afterlife, too, in streaming and DVDs and all of that stuff, too, winning can add a lot to a movie.
I had no idea that Oscars meant a lot of international.
Oh, huge. It's a huge symbol of quality and that sort of thing. And you see it on any kind of international poster. Yeah, Oscar is known around the world and is seen around the world.
Yeah.
You know, 200 countries or wherever they broadcast it.
Are the Emmys becoming as important to the networks?
I don't, you know, the odd thing is the networks sort of like, you know, they laughed at the Emmys in a lot of ways. And, you know, the networks aren't even part of the Emmys much anymore. You know, their shows.
Oh, you mean the broadcast networks?
Yeah, the broadcast networks. You know, they've sort of given it up to cable. That's the frustrating thing. They're the ones that air the Emmys, but they're the ones that don't win, you know, and it's always at their expense. So they're basically advertising these other shows, which is why these networks have gotten into the cable business.
I guess it seems like the big advantage, the big thing for the Emmys is that it'll bring that respectability to a network that doesn't otherwise have it. I mean, that's why, you know, our network and our show, and hey, me personally, you know, if we were to, you know, ever make it, if a project I were to work on would ever make it on that, you know, late night variety writing thing up next to The Daily Show.
Yeah.
And John Oliver and stuff like that, then everybody at the network I worked at would be like, hell yeah, now we're a real player in that space and people know it now, you know?
Absolutely. That would be huge. You know, just like it was for a little movie, a little TV show called Catastrophe on Amazon, which nobody had heard of. And it pulled off a writing nomination for comedy. And, you know, suddenly you're looking at, what is this show? And so, yeah, just for recognizing that, to get any kind of nomination like that, especially for something like True TV that doesn't get the nominations, you know, that's big. Yeah, that would be huge.
And so that doesn't seem like a... If in that case they're rewarding these networks or the ones that are going for it are the ones who are like, oh, we want to do good work and we want to sort of move up in the world, that seems like a positive incentive. That seems like a good thing in the industry.
It's a very positive one, and I think the Emmys are – that's what they are to be. They're about this year's stuff and about encouraging good work and rewarding it and that sort of thing. And, you know, Emmys, there's far more Emmys given out than anywhere else, 117 categories. Just for primetime Emmys alone. That's just primetime. Then we have daytime sports, news, international, on and on and on.
And there are some categories they like. I didn't know this. They swap in and out of which ones are in the telecast.
Yes.
Because there are so many.
I'm well aware of that because you have to trade for things. When I was a governor of the writers branch, you know, we wanted a fifth category. We wanted to split up those writing, the variety writing and the variety special writing.
Mm.
And to do that, we have a deal that only four writing categories would be on the show itself. They don't want the writers or the directors on the Emmys.
Well, they're not as attractive as the stars.
They want actors. And so we made a deal. You won't get any clips or anything else, you know, unless we have our four categories.
Hmm.
But we can't have any more. So when we add another category, we have to say, okay, it's going to the Creative Arts Emmy shows, of which there are now two.
Wow, really?
They split them in half. So they're on the preceding Saturday and Sunday of the primetime Emmy show that's on the air the next weekend. So there's now three primetime Emmy shows. Spread out over a week.
This is getting as bad as the Webbies in terms of...
Yes, and so we had to put one of them on there. So what we did was we switch it out. So one year, the late night TV comedy shows will be on the primetime broadcast Emmy show. And then the next year it'll be on the Creative Arts, which is
it won't be on TV.
I think is showing in somebody's garage. So
I had some friends. I had some, you know, now I have some friends who work on The Daily Show and some other shows like that. And like, oh hey, I'm in LA for the Emmys, and I'm like, oh okay, I'll watch on TV and see if you win. They're like, oh no, this year we're not on TV. I'm going to the other Emmys. I'm like, oh okay,
you can blame me for that. But it's only because I really wanted to split that up. I thought it was unfair to have all the, you know, Adam Ruins Everything compete against, you know, the Jimmy Fallon show. It didn't make sense.
That makes
a lot of sense. They're different kinds of shows.
Yes.
And but we can't have five categories. I mean, God, imagine five categories of writers on the Emmys.
So all of this huge campaigning, you know, and all this money that's spent, this whole sort of crazy system where you got, you know, they're sending out 20-pound boxes of DVDs and you know, we got these people going from event to event like crazy getting wined and dined. Is there do you see that as a bad thing? Do you think it has a bad effect on the industry? Do you think it's, you know, how do you feel about it overall. I mean,
no, I don't think it's a bad effect unless somebody starts doing exposés saying how horrible and following, you know, Brenda Vaccaro to, you know, the Palm where she's going to have her lobster. You know, I don't think it's a bad deal. Yeah. I really don't. You know, I mean, for a lot of these people, they're retired. They have nothing else to do. They've done a lot in their business, you know. And so what if they're doing this? I don't find that personally, and I know a lot of them, and I've been to a million of these things. And I do not find them influenced. If you talk to them privately at these events, they'll go like, you know, oh, yeah. I haven't really seen it, you know, or whatever, you know. But does it have an influence? Yeah, they can be charmed by certain actors or other things. And I've seen that work. And that's fine. But the whole idea is to get them to go and watch the actual movie or show. That's all it's about. And I see nothing wrong with that. You know, for me, anything goes in this business.
It does create that sense of buzz, though. I mean, because I remember when Netflix, after House of Cards came out, and then they got Orange is the New Black and everything else, I remember thinking, man, I am hearing about these Netflix shows before they're even out. I'm hearing people go like, oh, you got to see Orange is the New Black. It's the best show. I'm like, it's coming out next week. What are you talking about? You know, and so there is the extent to which if they sink enough money into it, you can say, well, yeah, at the end of the day, someone has to go watch the show. But people are more likely to watch the shows that they hear people go like, you got to see it, you got to see it, you got to see it, you know, and those are the ones that have the money put behind them. So there is still a degree to which, you know, the money can buy the awareness.
It's word of mouth, you know, and people talking to each other. And, you know, and any way you can get them into the tent, I think is a good way, my opinion. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest downside, and, you know, like I said, normally on our show we do scams and we do, you know, great injustices and stuff like that. Yeah. And this is one where it's a peek behind the curtain and it's a little bit less heavy than that. And when I think about, like, okay, what's the worst effect of it? I guess, you know, smaller shows like ours have a tougher time competing against these huge budgets. But at the end of the day, hey, we're still making a TV show. Are there shows that or movies that you feel sort of excited about this year that think, you know, are sadly going to be overlooked because they aren't as equipped to play this game that you would encourage people to go check out?
Oh, I think there's always movies like that, and particularly anything that opens in the first half of the year is at a disadvantage, awards-wise. I haven't seen that many great, great films yet this year, but I know in past years, if you're opening in March or April, it's very difficult to go all the way unless they're going to do a big, 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 huge campaign. And so I don't know how many movies so far. People have become so adjusted to the idea that the award season starts in September with the fall festivals and goes for 6 months from there that they tend to avoid opening any movie. I saw a little movie I would love to see get some attention called The Lovers with Deborah Winger. She hasn't had a role like this in 20 years, at least, a leading role. And Tracy Letts, who's a wonderful playwright and actor, Tony-winning actor, plays her husband. And it's a couple that are basically getting divorced. But then they've got people on the side. But then they get reattracted to each other and start cheating on those who they were cheating with.
That's a very nice twist on that story.
It is, right? And it's a very good movie. And A24, which won the Oscar for Best Picture with Moonlight this year, released it. And, you know, it's still around, but it's going to have a hard time because unless they're going to spend the money that they don't have, you know, for a big Academy budget, they won't be able to compete. They can send out the DVD, which hopefully they'll do, and people may discover it. But, you know, those get piled up, too, and you've got like 75 DVDs. And so
I still have my I'm still working through the Oscar movies from last year that I got as a member of.
That's the Writers Guild. Yeah. I'm in there, too. Yeah, that's crazy. I never know where I get them from because I'm in the broadcast critics, too, and I don't know who they're sending them through. So
I was this year on I was this year, and this is my first year as a member of SAG as well. And I was randomly selected to be part of the SAG nominating committee, which
you were already on the SAG nominating committee.
I guess it's a random draw.
It is. And in your first year.
First year.
See, you're one of those mysterious people that are on the SAG nominees. 2,100 people for movies and 2,100 for TV. Were you TV or movies?
I was TV because I think I'm a TV actor.
All right, so they took you on the TV one. That's very good.
And I got a ton of screeners that I had no time to watch because we were in production.
Everything. Yeah, from SAG.
We were shooting 12 hours a day. I wasn't able to watch any of them. And
well, what good are you as a SAG nominee?
Well, here's what I did. Here's what I did, and this is the problem with, you know, if, and this is why I can't criticize the system too much, because the alternative is not much better. Because what I did was, because I wasn't able to watch any of the things, I went, when I got the nomination form, I just went through and nominated my friends. That's all I did. Because I'm young.
You're just like everybody else.
I'm young Hollywood. Everybody I know, hey, if you guys know Nicole Byer, you know she's an incredible actor who deserves some recognition. I was like, I'm checking off her show. I came up with her at UCB. You know, she's.
That's great.
You know, so you know, that kind of nepotism is you know.
Rampant.
It was rampant as well. You know, I think one of the reasons I like this topic is because at the end of the day, it's just the entertainment industry, and no one's getting killed over it, and
it's not like pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord.
Oh gosh, it's nice to
have repercussions for the planet.
Yes,
this is just.
I mean, maybe Netflix sending out 22 boxes of DVDs, 22 pounds of DVDs that might have some repercussions for the planet, but hopefully
that
not
does.
Too many.
Yeah.
What do you hope that folks at home? You know, when they're watching the award show, what do you think that they should, you know, take away? You know, how do you hope that they might watch it differently, if at all?
Well, I hope, you know, I don't know. People watch these things to see who's wearing what and all of that.
Yeah.
That seems to be the going thing on these award shows. I think, you know, if you can learn something about a movie, if it makes you want to go check out a different kind of movie, if you're Joe Popcorn, as they say, and you only want to go see one kind of blockbuster, maybe you'll be inclined. You'll see a clip from something and say, hey, I want to go check that out, see something different, because if those smaller movies become successful, they'll make more of them. They won't be afraid of it. And the bottom line is, awards are nice, but people need to go see these things. And so award shows can... help you decide what you might want to watch. And that can influence the studios and what they want to make.
And that's sort of a nice thing about, you know, I will say, for all the cynicism that we have about it and everything, you know, I would probably not be remiss in saying that La La Land had to me felt like an enormous campaign last year.
Yeah.
And Moonlight ended up winning, and it ended up being the smaller movie. And
it was.
And you know, I don't want to say it was more deserving in any way, but if you're just rooting for sort of the underdog to get a shake in the process, that seems like an example where that happened.
Which it happened. There's a little caveat to that. Just the voting system of the Academy is kind of weird. They have 24 categories. 23 of them are a straight up and down vote. You get one more vote than the next guy, you win that category.
Mm-hmm.
Best Picture is a weighted ballot. So that you have to go my first choice, my second choice, my third choice, my fourth choice, my fifth choice, my last choice.
Wow.
And you place them that way. La La Land was the overwhelming favorite, but I know people who liked the movie but didn't want to see it win place it ninth. And Moonlight, on the other hand, was a movie that seemed to be liked by everybody, but not maybe in that number one slot as much, but number two. And this is where your number two choice, if it's Moonlight, can have more of an effect. This has happened repeatedly since they've done this system.
Really?
Whereas Gravity wins 7 Oscars, including Best Director, loses Best Picture to 12 Years a Slave, which wins only 3. But picks off that Best Picture because of that weighted ballot. And
I had no idea. So it's sort of a
Spotlight
mathematical
won
quirk.
2 last year, 2 Oscars.
Yeah.
One of them was screenplay at the beginning of the show, and then the last award of the show, after losing to Revenant and everything else in directing, it wins Best Picture because it was popular, but maybe not totally your first choice. I have a feeling that Revenant might have gotten more number one votes than Spotlight, but Spotlight by far.
That's so fascinating.
You know, and that definitely happened this year. I'm sure La La Land got more number one votes, but because it was such an overwhelming favorite, I've talked to voters like this who think they can influence the thing by weighting the ballot.
Well, it's also, it was both of those movies, Revenant and La La Land, are very divisive as
exactly. Where that's what happened.
I saw La La Land, I'll be honest, I hated La La Land.
Yeah, see, you're one of those.
I would have given La La Land a 9. And look, I talked about La La Land. I had the most fun of my life I had a conversation about La La Land every single day. If you right now wanted to talk about how I feel about La La Land, I would go into it. You know, it had but I would totally give it that 9.
I did. I love La.
That's fine. We don't need to get. We'll do that on the next podcast. We'll get into that on the next podcast.
Devoted to La La Land. Yeah, that would be great.
but so that device, because the way it's weighted, movie that's divisive would
you
maybe
can actually actively campaign with your vote against a movie like that. I know that's what happened. I talked to enough people that gave me that example. And that's why you had, you know, it was hilarious with, of course, the envelope mix up with Faye Dunaway and everything.
Could it be any better? That's up there with the remember when the guy pitched the Galarraga pitched the perfect game and the umpire got it wrong and then so it was denied from him. That was up there with that. I was like, that is the best thing that could ever happen.
It was hilarious to me because it was just the wrong envelope, because most people don't know they have two sets of envelopes.
Yes.
And the guy accidentally gave another Emma Stone,
yes,
who was the previous one, who happened to be the only Best Actress nominee that was in a Best Picture nominee. So said La La Land on the envelope. So when he handed it to Faye Dunaway and she's looking, she sees La La Land. So she blurts it out.
Yes.
Now, what if it was not Emma Stone that had won and it was Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins? Would the Best Picture have been Florence Foster Jenkins and the whole audience?
Everyone would be like, what? She wasn't even nominated.
What just happened here?
I guess should we go up there? It would have been more obvious. It would have been more obvious that it was a mistake.
That was the moment I was waiting for. But unfortunately, Emma Stone won. So we had the La La Land moment.
But see, here's the thing. Again, and it comes back to it. It's all good fun, right? So like, you have to say at the end of the day, oh, it was a big disaster. Oh, people, heads got to roll for this. But then you have to imagine everyone involved at the end of the day is going like, man, that was some of the best TV ever, wasn't it?
It was.
Wasn't that a blast?
Yeah.
Could it screw up like that again next year? I mean, they're bringing Jimmy Kimmel back maybe so he can screw
things
up.
And the producers, you know, and ABC was thrilled with it. They said, what are you kidding? We loved it. You know, it gets people talking about the Oscars.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to do a light topic like this. and thank you so much for coming and talk to us about it, Pete.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate the peek behind the curtain.
All right.
Well, thank you once again, Pete, for coming on the show. And that is it this week for Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. We will be back in just 2 weeks, so please tune in then. Our producer is Shara Morris. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about the podcast and subscribe to us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to leave us a rating or comment wherever you subscribed. It would really help us out. Again, Adam Ruins Everything is currently in the off-season, but it is coming back on July 11th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. Write this down. 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on True TV. 16 more episodes coming your way. And in the meantime, if you want to bone up, you can watch full episodes and clips at truetv.com/AdamRuinsEverything or on the Watch True TV app, which is probably available on any app store that you could hope to find it on. In the meantime, we'll see you here in 2 weeks. Thank you guys for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.